Roller Express, Family Roller Coaster, and much more. Open weekdays from 6 p.m., Saturday and Sunday from 2 p.m. That's the new theme park fun fair at Ennis Mark Grounds, running until this Sunday, May 12th.
Morning Focus with Alan Morrissey, giving you all sides of the story first. Clare FM.
Now, the Best of Clare Awards for 2024. So many great businesses getting involved with it. And as you've been hearing all this morning so far on the Colin McGrath Breakfast Show and here on Morning Focus, we have been filling you in on the top five businesses in each category. I mentioned the top five businesses in the Best Butcher category and Best Eatery category already this morning. So the top five in the running in the Best Fashion Retail category are Brass in Ennis, Cornucopia in Ennis, Off the Rails in Ennis Diamond, Patrick Burke Menswear in Ennis and Kilrush, and Willow in Ennis as well. So five great businesses there. They're the top five in the Best Fashion Retail category for the Best of Clare Awards 2024. Voting will resume from 5 p.m. Today, and then you'll have until midnight on the 19th of May to vote. So do log on to clare.fm from 5 p.m. today and make sure your vote counts for the Best of Clare Awards for 2024. 086 1800 964, that's the number to send in your gardening questions.
In the garden with Keane's Garden Centre Kilcolgan for the best selection of trees and shrubs in the west of Ireland. See keanesgardencentre.ie.
And the one and only Tom Stewart from Keane's Garden Centre in Kilcolgan is with us as ever for In the Garden. Tom, how are things?
All very good. Thanks, Alan. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you as well. Hope you got a lot of gardening done over the bank holiday weekend, particularly on Sunday when the weather was glorious. Or maybe you were just too busy working in the garden centre.
I think the latter is the correct one. Very busy in the garden centre over the weekend. So, all I had time to do was when I got home was collapse. So, no gardening opportunities just at this weekend. But it will come all right.
Very good. Even Tom deserves a break, guys. Okay, lots of questions coming in already. But before all of that, you have some sage advice for the listeners. And this week's topic is about growing hydrangeas in your garden. And you have some tips and tricks for the Clare FM gardeners to get the best out of one of the all-time favourites.
Yeah, thanks very much, Alan. So, and thankfully, as you mentioned, the weather has improved and we're getting an opportunity to get out into the garden. And the forecast for the week ahead is pretty good too. So will there be plenty of opportunities. And if you're looking to add some shrubs to your garden or something to fill a pot, you could certainly consider the many different types of hydrangeas. So hydrangeas are an excellent shrub with many different varieties and types. And with such a diverse range, there's definitely a hydrangea for every garden. Most of us are somewhat familiar with the mop head types. These are the large ball-shaped flower heads coming in a range of colours with shades of pink, red, white and blue. And you can also get what's known as lace cap varieties with similar colour ranges, all flowering through summer and well into the autumn. Then there's also cone-shaped flower heads on what's known as the paniculata varieties, suitable for both traditional or contemporary gardens and varieties suited to growing in pots. You can also get those, and you can also get climbing hydrangeas, which are really good for partially shaded areas. So hydrangeas in general, they do best in moist, well-drained soil and maybe with a little bit of dappled shade, not too sunny and not too shady, and never in very dry soil. To keep the blue hydrangeas blue, you need to grow them in acidic soil. But there are lots of other, all the other ones, they're all happy in alkaline or slightly limey soil. They're not fussed. You can also grow your blue hydrangeas in pots using the ericaceous compost and a little bit of the ericaceous feed. That'll help maintain that nice blue colour if that's not your natural soil type. If you have a water butt or a barrel, watering them with rainwater is also advantageous for the blue varieties. Just slightly softer or slightly acidic-y rainwater suits them better. Hydrangeas, they can take a bit of wind, but the new foliage can be prone to a little bit of windburn, so perhaps avoiding very windy areas is the better option. And you can plant hydrangeas at any time of the year, making sure to get plenty of regular watering if you're planting them in summer, and perhaps a bark or farmyard manure mulch just to help reduce evaporation from the soil, and always dig in plenty of compost and some manure when you're planting them. You're looking to create a nice rich moisture retentive soil foundation for them to grow happily in. For pruning the mop head hydrangeas, this is done in the middle of spring, April or May, around this time of the year is fine. You want to cut down to the first or the highest bud on the stem. If you cut it back too hard, that'll sacrifice the flowering as they flower on the previous year's growth. So just down the stem from the old flower head to the first emerging bud. You can also propagate hydrangeas by taking softwood cuttings in spring from a non-flowering stem with about three sets of leaves. Use a small bit of the rooting powder and place your cuttings in a small pot with some multi-purpose compost. Get them into the compost and water it as soon as you can after taking the cuttings, and just keep them well watered without overwatering them. Once you see the cuttings have taken off and have a small bit of growth, you can grow them on in a shady spot. And if you want to grow something different from the traditional mop head varieties, one of the easiest types of hydrangeas to grow are the panicle or the hydrangea paniculata that we mentioned. They're really adaptable and are happy in containers or beds. They have a beautiful large cone shaped or conical flower heads, and they range in colours from white to lime and pink hues, sometimes changing from a lime green to pink through the season, depending on the variety. These guys, they're not fussed on soil type. Give them a feed of maybe something like Osmo Pro Bloom in the spring and water them well after planting, and they're fully hardy, so no problems with frost. Unlike the traditional mop head or lace cap hydrangeas, the paniculata varieties flower on the current year's growth. They create their flower buds after they've begun to leaf out in spring. This means they can be pruned without negatively impacting the flowers. So you can cut them back in late winter, early spring to around one third their height. And they range in size of a mature size of 3 foot to 6 foot or even 7 foot, depending on the variety. And I think they look particularly well when planted in clusters, so 3, 5 or 7, and make a big impact with them. And with a range of, and sizes and colours, you could have multiple different varieties all in one bed if you wanted. Amongst my own favourites, there's Phantom, which has huge flowers starting off in a pale green colour and then turning white and as they mature through the summer. They can reach heights of 6 or 7 feet tall, or you can keep them smaller if you prune them each year. Limelight is another large variety with huge flowers. They start off pale green, then they fade to white and then pink in autumn. They also make great cut flowers also, and are happy in sun or partial shade. And Bobo is a beautiful white dwarf variety, really nice in that paniculata range. And Whims Red is a nice kind of pink reddish type. So if you're looking for something to flower all summer, well into the autumn, that's hardy and easy to grow, it's hard to beat hydrangeas just for their variety and versatility. And if you need any, we've loaded them in the shop. You can call out and we'll help you pick some out.
Okay, lovely stuff. You also have a few jobs drawn up for our gardeners for the coming week, Tom.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. And certainly now it's May has kicked off and it's time to start planting or at least planning your window boxes and your hanging baskets. And there's loads of fabulous, colourful options to go for that'll flower all summer long and even into the autumn. So any of that summer bedding, it's great value. It flowers for so long and it does such a good display. Also, lots of vegetables and salad plants are available and ready to plant now. A huge selection of edible plants and seeds as well. You could consider planting up some sweet pea. You could use a wigwam or using some bamboo canes or some climbing plant supports. Great for scent and added height. So sweet pea you can grow from now. If you've planted any seed potatoes, it's important that you earth them up, the seed potatoes you've planted. This protects them from any late frost. It also blocks the sunlight getting into the tubers and gives the spuds a bit more room to grow. If you have any seed potatoes to plant, get them in the ground now as soon as you can. But yeah, keep them earthed up is important. And your summer flowering bulbs, they can be planted into pots for nice, bright, colourful displays all summer. And maybe if you have a garden hoe, get the garden hoe out and just keep on top of the weeds before they set seed and before they become troublesome.
Okay, there you go, folks. Some jobs for you to attend to in the garden over the coming week. It is time for the listeners' questions, and they are many and varied, as you would expect no less from the Morning Focus listeners. And we begin with an emailed question on focus@clare.fm from Jane Phillips, who says, "Good morning, Alan and Tom." Jane says, "I had spring bulbs in pots. The flowers are gone. Can I take them out of the pots and leave in the greenhouse to die back, as I want to plant the pots with summer bedding? And what is the best way to store bulbs until planting again in the autumn? Thank you, Tom."
Good morning, Jane, and thanks for your question. So, yeah, your spring flowering bulbs, if they've all finished and are faded away and you want to reuse those pots, I'd be just a little bit fearful of the greenhouse because they might dry out and they don't need any protection from any fluctuations in weather or anything like that. So if you had some old pots, you could fill them with just regular multi-purpose compost and replant those bulbs into old pots, be them plastic pots or whatever you might have. And you want to try and leave the foliage there as long as possible. It'll send more energy back into the bulbs and it'll give you a nice display for next year. So I'd say better off either planted in a in a quiet part in the garden where they won't have an impact, or into a large pot with some compost, and leave them outside, let the foliage wilt down naturally, but that'll free up those pots that were full of that colour for potentially other plants for your summer planting stuff. But best, I think, Jane, plant it out into a bigger pot with some compost, leaving them outside where they'll get a bit of sunlight and they'll be watered and all that, and they'll come good for you next year.
Okay, there you go, Jane. Stephen is up next and says, "Hi, Tom. My lawn is all moss. What can I do? If I kill it, do I have to rake it up? And what is the best, lowest work method?"
Good morning, Stephen, and a good question. It's very topical and we get lots of it in at this time of the year. Now, to a certain degree, the more work you put in, probably as in life, the better the result would be. If you have an awful lot of moss, I would go for a two-step program where I would apply a liquid moss treatment, like Zero is a very good liquid moss treatment. Now, all it does is treat moss, but it's very effective and it works very fast. So you could dilute and spray on the liquid Zero. And then a few days later, I would apply a traditional feed, weed and moss killer. So the liquid Zero will knock out most of the moss. And then, as I said, a few days later, if you apply the granulated feed, weed and moss killer, and as described there, it'll feed your lawn, it'll thicken up the grass and make it nice and green and healthy and lush. And moss doesn't like a lawn that's been fed, so that has a number of positive impacts there. So, and then there's also a granulated weed killer included, which will help keep on top of the weeds. And there's also a further moss treatment in it. There's a little bit of sulfate of iron in those combination ones. So it'll make your lawn healthy and green, kill weeds and give the moss a further treatment. Now, you might want to get yourself a small box or a little bag of lawn seed, and after you've raked out the dead moss, if you apply a little bit of the lawn seed, what you want to do, Stephen, is you want to get the grass to establish rather than let the moss re-establish. So after you do your liquid, follow it up with a granulated feed and weed, and then throw down a little bit of lawn seed to help thicken it out. Then with the liquid product, you can apply that throughout the year. So rather than just applying it in late spring and early summer and leaving it for 12 months and letting the moss continually build up, if you were to apply the liquid treatment throughout the year and even into winter months, you're just keeping the moss in check and you're not allowing it to build up. Now, there's also a few things you can do like scarifying and aerating the lawn to help improve the conditions. But I think if you apply the liquid Zero, followed up with a feed, weed and moss killer, then followed up with a little bit of lawn seed to thicken it out again, you should be in good order. Another thing, just when you're mowing the lawn, if you try to mow on a relatively high cut, if you cut it too low, you nearly encourage moss. So raise the blades of your lawnmower up, and it'll be one of the measures that will help keep things in order. And then, as I said, if you apply the liquid Zero throughout the year and even through the winter months, every now and again, maybe three or four times throughout the year, you'll have quite good results, and you're kind of minimizing the buildup of moss. So when you come this time next year to treat it, there'll be a little bit of moss in your lawn and you'll apply a feed and weed again, but there won't be loads of moss. So if you follow those steps, you won't go too wrong.
Okay, Martin in Kilkee says, "Good morning, Alan and Tom. I'm looking for climbing plants that I could put on a northwest facing trellis in a windy spot. I put sweet pea there last year, but it got wind damaged and didn't thrive there."
Good morning, Martin. A good question. So climbing plants in a kind of, it'll be probably a little bit shaded, but certainly as we mentioned there in this morning's topic, a climbing hydrangea, they're a good vigorous climber, they can take a good bit of wind as well, and they've a lovely kind of white, loads of white flowers on them, they're really nice, small, but lots of them, they'll handle a bit of shade, but they're a good tough plant. So now, anything that's climbing, be it a climbing hydrangea or a climbing jasmine or some clematis, and any of those would be certainly worth trying. When they're planted at the base of a wall, it tends to be what we call a bit of a rain shadow. So they can tend to dry out, and sometimes the soil underneath, there might be a bit of rubble lower down, so it can be very free draining. So the soil between the rain shadow effect of the wall itself and the rubble material underneath, the water can drain away really quickly, and it can be a bit of a dry area. So certainly improving the soil by digging in lots of compost and some farmyard manure to help condition the soil. And then just in the first season or two, while the plant is establishing, just making sure that they're kept well watered, particularly during any dry spells, and let them get a good foothold and let them establish quite well. And that should do it. But certainly a climbing hydrangea would be nice. You could go for some of the lovely flowering clematis, which should do okay for you as well. There's a climbing jasmine. It's an evergreen plant, really nice with white scented flowers. Maybe even potentially you could look at a climbing rose as well. Now, the
the climbing hydrangea and the rose and clematis, they'll all need a trellis to support them when they're climbing up onto the wall. Or if you wanted to go something that is somewhat self-adhesive, as we say, you could go for nice variegated climbing ivy, and they'll take the tough conditions as well, that northwest, that kind of northerly aspect you have, and the windy conditions. So you could have a really nice variegated ivy climbing on the wall without a trellis, and it'll stick to it by itself. So a few options there for you, Martin.
Okay, there you go, Martin. Colette in North Clare is up next, who says, "Hi, Alan and Tom. Please, Tom, could you recommend a variety of cherry blossom that won't spread too much for a small lawn? When is the best time of year to plant, and do you have them in stock? Thank you. Love the programme," says Colette.
Well, thank you very much, Colette, and good morning to you. If you want a cherry blossom that won't take up too much space, there is a variety called Prunus amanagauna, and it has very upright branches. Sometimes it's called the flagpole cherry. Just due to its nature, it's very upright and the branches go up, so it doesn't take up lots of space. It has a fabulous display. We sell lots of them. From memory, I can't remember if we have one or two still in stock. We might do. If we didn't, come next September, we'd have loads. If we do have one in stock, there's no harm in planting them now. There's no problem. But amanagauna is a really good variety. If you want one, tons of flowers and doesn't take up too much space. Now, you can get what's called dwarf cherry blossoms, which they're like a shrub form of a cherry blossom, and it might go to, you know, 2 or 3 feet tall. They're a nice option as well. But if you wanted a cherry blossom tree that doesn't take up too much space, the Prunus amanagauna is lovely. You could plant it now, no problem, if you came across it. The usual rules, a little bit of compost, stake and a rubber tree tie, just to keep it secure and just keep it well watered while it's establishing. But after that, yeah, so that Prunus amanagauna is a nice one, Colette, and you wouldn't go too wrong with that.
The wonderful Kay from Carrafin is up next. The queen of the gardeners in Clare. How are you, Kay? Who says, "Good morning, Alan and Tom." Kay says her polytunnel is thriving, and she also says, "I have some space left for the humble spud. What variety is the best to sow at this time of year now that the weather is improving? I hope to have plenty of questions for you, Tom, in the coming months. Thanks again to you both."
Brilliant, Kay, and good morning to you, and great to hear from you. So at this time of the year, the availability of seed potatoes will be a little bit minimal. Preferably for myself, I'd be thinking some of the early varieties, but you might not come across any early varieties at the moment. You could go for, we'd have some main crop varieties left in the shop. We'd have some lovely records, and they're really nice. Now, they'll go in now. It'll be towards the end of the summer that they're ready for harvesting, and they're lovely, lovely flowery main crop potato. You could do them outside if you wanted to, Kate. They're happy to grow outside in the soil. If you wanted to do them outside, no problem, either in the ground or in a raised bed or even in large containers, you could do them. But perhaps for next year, you could consider if you get some early varieties, Sharps Express or Home Guard or something like that. They don't take as long to be ready, and you can, you know, and don't take up as much space as a main crop. But if you want to do the main crop, by all means, you could do the records inside or outside. You know, if you had room outside, Kay, I'd be tempted to do them outside. And maybe that little bit of space you have inside, maybe you might find room for another cucumber or tomato plant or courgette or just some mixed salad leaves or something like that. Or potentially you could just leave that space for a nice seat and you could sit down and read a magazine or listen to Clare FM on the radio at your leisure. But so if you're going for spuds, all we'd have at the moment is the main crop records.
Okay, definitely listen to Clare FM. That's our advice. Maura's been in touch to say, "Good morning, Alan. I have a gold-coloured conifer that is 12 years old. It is getting too tall and too broad for the garden. What can I do to reduce its size?" wonders Maura.
Yeah, good morning, Maura. A lot of the conifers, over time, they can get a bit big, depending on the variety, and they can be not what's wanted. Now, a lot of conifers, the way to trim them or keep them in check is regular pruning, and most of them you can only cut the current year's growth, so the new soft growth. If you cut back really hard into older wood or older branches, they won't regenerate, and it kind of stumps out, and it doesn't hold its shape so well. So you might have to have a look at it. You might be able to maintain it at its size, but a lot of conifers, they don't respond very well to being cut back too severe. You could also consider, look, before it gets a whole lot bigger, would you consider maybe taking it out altogether and planting something different in there? And it might even be another conifer, but one that you give a regular trim that it doesn't get too big, or a variety of conifer that its mature height wouldn't be too big, like a Thuja Smarald or something like that might be an option. But have a look at it more and just consider, are you as well to remove it altogether? As I said, a lot of them, if they're cut back too severe, they won't regenerate new growth and they look a bit kind of hacked back or stumped back, and it mightn't be as appealing to look at. So perhaps consider removing it altogether, and you know, that could be an option, and replacing it with something different. Or as I said, most conifers, it's just on the current year's growth, that softer growth. If you look closely, you'll see dark kind of wood lower down the stem. You don't want to cut into that really. You can only cut that soft growth at the top of the branches. And if that's not going to be enough, perhaps it might be worth considering taking it up and replacing it with something different, Maura.
Okay, there you go, Maura. Grania is asking, hi Tom, just wondering if it's too early to plant out summer bedding and flower boxes. Thanks a mil.
Morning, Grania. I don't think so. Usually the what you're trying to avoid is any late frosts. And on the recent forecast, I didn't see any sign of any frost in the next few days anyway. So by all means, if you want to be extra safe, and this is probably overcautious, but you could plant up all your window boxes and your hanging baskets, have them out during the day. And if there was any cold nights promised, bring them in at night into a shed or something and back out the next day. But generally speaking, like most people, we saw ourselves over the weekend, we're buying loads of the summer bedding, from basket plants to geraniums to anything that will go into a pot or a window box or hanging basket. And they're all going to go out now in the next few days. So Grania, I think you're safe enough. But as I said, if you want to be extra safe, plant them up so they start to come on and they start to fill out nicely. And if there was any cold nights, just bring them in. So just keep an eye on the forecast. If there was any frost or even a cold night promise, just bring them in and put them back out the following day.
Okay, Brona in Kilmaley says, hi Tom, I look forward to the show, very informative. Just wondering about my rhubarb. It's down a few years and I even covered it for the winter, but it's coming very weak. What am I doing wrong, wonders Brona.
Good morning, Brona, and thanks for your lovely comments there. So rhubarb, it likes nice, rich kind of soil, and you can even mulch it on the top with some farmyard manure, which is a good soil conditioner. But you could lay farmyard manure all around the base, a good thick mulch of it. And you could even then water, after that's on, you could fill up a watering can and add some of the Nutri One. It's a very good liquid feed. It's high in potash and it's good to help plants kind of reinvigorate them or give them a bit of a tonic. So you could apply a farmyard manure mulch, put in some of the Nutri One into a watering can and give them a good watering. In general, you don't really need to keep them covered for the winter. They're happy enough to be outside. Sometimes if they're covered too long, you might get a little bit of spindly growth and it mightn't look too good. Some people do cover them, and it's a term called forcing the rhubarb, and it forces them to produce stems and they're stretching up for the light, and then you take away the cover and it gives you an earlier harvest on the rhubarb. So that's a different method of, it's called forcing rhubarb. Now sometimes it can tire out the plant and you wouldn't want to do it too often, so just be mindful of that. And when you're harvesting your rhubarb, if you you want to avoid harvesting all the stalks every year. So you can, we'll say, harvest half the stalks, or even leave some of the crowns, leave some of your rhubarb plants. If you have a few rhubarb plants, Brona, leave some of them and not harvest them and let them just build up a bit of strength and they'll be better the following year. So a lot of people would have a few rhubarb plants and they'd either harvest every other one every other year or just harvest half of the stalks each year, just to allow some foliage there and send energy back into the crown, just so the plant aren't becoming too depleted. So between that and giving them a good mulch of the farmyard manure and a good liquid feed, I think that you should be in good order.
Okay, brilliant stuff. There are so many more questions, but we have no time to get to them. But I promise you, those of you who, time is money, Tom, those of you who sent in questions that I didn't get a chance to put to Tom, I will put them to him next Monday. So make sure you tune in again. The voucher winners, the €30 vouchers for Kane's Garden Centre. Well done to Martin in Kilkee and Maury. You've each won yourself a voucher. Tom, well done. Well played. And you had a busy bank holiday weekend, so we'll let you get a bit of a rest and we'll chat to you next Monday. You can go off for a bit of a snooze now. Talk to you then, Tom.
Thanks, Alan. Take care now. Take care. Bye-bye.
Cheers. The great Tom Stewart there from Kane's Garden Centre in Colgan. I will put those questions to Tom next Monday, I promise. We're going to look back on the weekend in sport, and what a performance from Clare versus Kerry. They pushed them hard in the Munster football final. We'll chat about that after this break.
This Friday evening, Clare under 20 hurlers travel to FBD Semple Stadium Thurles as they take on Tipperary in the final round of the round robin series of the O'Neills.com Munster under 20 hurling championship. Throw in 7:30 p.m. Clare FM will bring you full live match commentary and analysis in association with Pepper's Bar and Restaurant Fecal.
Hi, Tom Stewart here from Kane's